You know it's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe iced range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Jess Root, your host of Revenge of the Birds Radio. Today's show, as always, is brought to you by Audible.com, where you can find the internet's greatest audio content online. And like we have been telling you, Revenge of the Birds Radio listeners can get a free audiobook download by visiting audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. Today, Arizona Cardinals fans, we have a treat for you. We have SB Nation's Philadelphia Eagles blog, Bleeding Green Nation. We have Brandon Lee Gouton on, who runs the site and does all sorts of great content about the Philadelphia Eagles, whom the Arizona Cardinals will play this weekend. Brandon, thanks for coming on with me today.
Hey, no problem. Glad to be here.
All right. Tell us about what's the state. The Eagles off to a great start so far this season, 5-1 like the Cardinals. What's kind of the state of the Eagles right now? How do the fans, what's the optimism, level of optimism for the team right now moving forward?
I definitely think it's huge right now because, you know, the Eagles are, they're coming off the bye week. They beat the Giants in week 6, 27-0. You know, I think going into that Giants game, the Eagles had just beat the Rams, and it looked like they were going to get a convincing win, but the Rams really came back to make it close in the end. And I think that had a lot of Eagles fans thinking, you know, hey, we're 4-1 right now, but we might be able to be, I mean, we might as easily just be 4 or 1-4 or, you know, whatever, because, you know, they won, but they were winning ugly and they're getting behind in games early in the year. The offense, which is supposed to be the identity of the Philadelphia Eagles, the Chip Kelly, was really struggling because Nick Foles and LeSean McCoy, you know, two of the most important players in offense, just really weren't looking sharp. And that was due to offensive line injuries. But the defense and special teams really stepped up in those games and carried them. But, you know, so you have that kind of worry, and they come into this Giants game and they win 27-0, their first shutout since 1996. Now, I think fans are feeling really good now, especially because you have that bye week and you're getting some players back from injury. And I think everyone's just ready to take on the Cardinals.
And so what was you say the offensive line health issues were kind of the problem leading up to that game. But what really clicked? What made it – what went from – because a conversation I've – one of the many preview conversations we've been having, I believe it was – I think it was with one of the other writers that you have was – I mentioned the whole concept of fluky points because they're really hard to count on with the seven – return touchdowns, the defensive touchdowns, the special teams touchdowns. Those aren't points that you can generally count on or even predict. How the Eagles and how did things finally come together against the Giants? Was it kind of a culmination of that a big Thursday night game? Is it because it's an NFC East game? Is that more of a case where we think that you guys think that it's going to be putting things together now they came through? And they turned a corner offensively or what?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do think part of it was the fact it was such a huge game. You know, there was no way they were going to show up to that game and, you know, come out flat because there was just, you know, a lot on the line. They're playing to keep first place in the NFC East. The Seahawks had just lost to the Cowboys. I don't know if they were keeping an eye on that, but, you know, I'm sure that didn't hurt. So, I mean, you know, they just came out really firing on all cylinders. But I really didn't see anything too unsustainable in that game. It's not like you had these players who aren't capable of doing what they did, you know, playing over their head LeSean McCoy returned to form for the first time. The Eagles made a couple of tweaks with the run game. Instead of lining up in the shotgun, as they like to do very often with, you know, the inside and the outside, the reads, Nick Foles was lined up under center. I think that LeSean McCoy said he felt like that helped him just because of being able to line up in the backfield behind Nick Foles and be able to see, you know, pre-snap or as he's getting the ball, you know, where he's going to run, where the lane is and everything. And really just the play of the offensive line, just execution was better. I mean, Nick Foles, he had time to throw, and aside from two turnovers, which are terrible, he had two really bad interceptions. But, you know, you take those away, which you can't easily just do, but you do for the sake of this discussion. And, you know, he looks sharper than he really has all season. So maybe he kind of turned a corner in that respect. Again, LeSean McCoy looked great because not only did he look rejuvenated, but he was given room to run. David Moak, who's filling in for injured starting center Jason Kelce, had a really good game. Moak's been really struggling here in replacing Kelce, but he, you know, for whatever reason, maybe just, you know, getting a few starts under his belt has helped. Maybe kind of these guys are getting more experience and feeling more comfortable at where they're at. It'll be interesting to see, though. You raised a good point. You know, is this going to be them turning the corner, or was that just one game? You know, we'll see here on Sunday.
And so you brought up Nick Foles. Interesting contrast between the 2013 season that he had with the only the two interceptions. Kind of very odd the way the season turned out, because a guy in Arizona myself, I never thought a whole lot about Nick Foles in terms of a pro prospect, but to have the year that he had a season ago, and then coming down to earth, you mentioned in the Q&A that we did, natural there's regression, so he's going to regress naturally to the mean, because you know, even the greatest quarterbacks in history don't have seasons like Foles had a season ago, so naturally there's going to be that. But aside from the injuries to the offensive line, was there any worry so far that he isn't, well, is there any question as the type of quarterback that Nick Foles is? Is he last year, is he this year, or is he somewhere in between?
You know, I almost don't know what to make of Nick Foles right now. I mean, you know, he has that awesome season last year. I think everyone's just ready to buy in and say, wow, this is the guy, you know. 27-2, not too many quarterbacks have done that. Not too many quarterbacks have thrown 7 touchdowns in one game. The guy's jersey is in the Hall of Fame for that. So, you know, you're looking at this stuff and you're like, you know, this guy's legit. He has to be, you know, or else, you know, is this guy just a total fluke? I don't think people want to believe that. And I don't think he really is. I think there's more evidence to suggest that, you know, this isn't just a one-year wonder kind of thing. But, it, you know, you do wonder, because now he leads the NFL in turnovers, or at least he did at the bye. He's something of like 1 of 8 quarterbacks to have less than 60% completion percentage, and average.
And that company is, as you noted, isn't good.
No, it is not good at all. It's just, you know, so you associate him with those names in that context, and you're just like, wow, you know, this guy is really not performing well. And at the same time, a lot of people are going to say, oh, but the Eagles are 5-1. So, you know, they'll throw that number in your face. And that's all well and good, and it's true, obviously, to some extent, he's playing well enough that they can win because they're winning. But at the same time, you think, you know, you even mentioned it, you know, you have these defensive touchdowns and you have these special teams touchdowns. To an extent, they're winning in spite of his performance at times. He really needs to be better moving forward. He's eligible for a contract after the season. I think the way he's played right now, you can't really give it to him because you just don't know who this guy is fully yet. So, but again, that can change. And I think, you know, this is the time now down the stretch to really erase all that doubt from the early season struggles. And he can really just put that behind him if he lights it up down the stretch here.
So what is the injury status? Obviously, Kelce's not back at practice, but he's not eligible to come off IR for another 2 weeks, correct?
That's Mathis.
That's Mathis. Got it. Okay. Right. So is Kelce in line perhaps to play this weekend?
I believe not. Theoretically, it's possible, but I don't really think it's going to happen at all because he just returned to practice this week. You know, I think he's still a week or two away. As far as Darren Sproles and Michael Kendricks, though, I think both of those players have a chance to play. But with Kendricks, it's kind of looking more and more doubtful that he is going to return. He's been out since week two with a calf injury. That's a big loss for the Eagles because not only is he a good inside linebacker who can cover and defend against the run, but he's also really good as a pass rusher. And the Eagles' pass rush has been good in recent weeks, but still, you know, you like to have him out there. And then Darren Sproles, he's just been huge for Philadelphia. I mean, I mentioned an offense that struggled early on this season. He's the one guy who's been consistent. And even just as a punt returner, he has 280 punt return yards, which is, you know, leading the league by a lot. I think the next closest returner doesn't even have 100 less than him. So, I mean, he's been vital, and it looks like he might be a game-time decision. Now, none of this is official yet because the Eagles are pretty secretive with their injury status. They don't reveal much at all.
In classical Chip Kelly style.
Yes, that is. Back when he was at Oregon, apparently he would used to put like boots on players, you know, who weren't even hurt at all, just to mess with, you know, like the media, because they didn't have to release an injury report. You know, he could just try to fake people out. So yeah, we really don't know, but you know, the Eagles are really going to need Sproles at least, and if they don't have him, it's going to be a big loss.
I would have to agree. Thus far in the season, you know, in terms of what you say, would you say who's been the most impactful player or more important player overall to their 5-1 start? Has it been McCoy or is it Sproles? Not saying that Sproles is a more important player than McCoy. Obviously, McCoy is the bell cow of that team. But Sproles is the guy that really scares me as a fan going into that game because of the wild card that he is, especially how in the world did the Eagles even manage to get LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles in the same team? That's like drafting in Madden on the fantasy draft and managing to get that and Peyton Manning. How do you do that?
It was funny because you look at where he was with the Saints, and the Saints were just willing to cut him because you know they were tight on the cap. And they kind of wanted to make these big moves. They wanted to sign Jairus Byrd, and they wanted to, I don't know who else they got. I'm trying to think here, but they wanted to clear up cap space, and they didn't want Sproles at the number that they had him at.
They had to pay Jimmy Graham too.
Right. Oh yeah, that's what I was missing there. So they had to pay Jimmy Graham, and you know they probably should have kept him because I mean you get this fifth round pick for him, and the Saints are, you know, they're what, 2-5 or 2-4 now. I mean they've been struggling. But it was kind of amazing when the Eagles got him because I wrote the story that I wrote at the time that the trade broke. The subtitle, I remember it clear as day, was Chip Kelly just got another weapon. And that was the case. And it almost seemed like, wow, these guys are crazy. You know, they're giving Chip Kelly Darren Sproles, you know, a guy who's not a full-time player, but he's very dangerous in the limited role that he plays. And it's kind of been a complete revelation as far as Sproles has played. I think through the first four games of the season, he had already broken a career-long rushing yard in week one. He had like a 49-yard run for a touchdown, which broke a career high. In week two, he had a career high in receiving yards in a game. It was over 150. And then in week four, he had a career-long punt return against the 49ers. And this is a guy who's played in the NFL for 10 years.
Yes, yes.
31.
That's quite amazing. So What does he do to the offense? Obviously, now do they use McCoy and Sproles in the backfield at the same time at all, or is it more of a sub type thing? Do they manage to get both of them in the game at the same time?
It's more of a sub type thing. The Eagles really, Chip talks about often, you know, how they're really just a one running back system.
So Les Bowen tweeted out earlier today after practice and said, well, both Kendricks and Sproles listed it limited again. Don't think that bodes well. Would you think, based on just Bowen's assessment of the team, is that probably... you said Kendricks probably not to go. Sproles may be a game-time decision. Would you lean towards that, that Sproles might not be playing?
I would say... here's the thing about Sproles. When he first got hurt, it looked bad, but there was a report shortly afterwards that he was going to miss at least one or two games. So in that sense, you almost want to think he is going to miss this week just based on that first report. But based on everything that's going on this week and that he's kind of back earlier than anticipated. It kind of seems like he is going to be that game time decision, so I don't want to rule him out at all. But with Kendricks, it is looking doubtful at this point to me that he is going to play.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, the Sproles injury, I believe when I read it, was the same thing that Calais Campbell suffered. So it was an MCL strain, or so it's a partial tear of the MCL.
Right.
And so that's exactly what Calais Campbell suffered on that chop block by Julius Thomas in Denver. The prognosis was 1 to 3 weeks. It looks like, with Campbell, he went to practice on Thursday for the first time, and it looks like he might play, and it looks like kind of the same scenario. He's been out 2 weeks, and is that the same thing for Sproles? He's been out for 2 weeks already?
Right, because he suffered the injury against the Giants, and then, you know, he had the bye week. Okay. So
it's kind of looking like the same situation. Sproles might play, Calais Campbell might play, and in that sense, let's go to Kendricks. What does that do differently for the defense? I know he's kind of been a difference maker in terms of the dynamic of the defense, has he not?
He has been, because like I said earlier, just as a pass rusher, that's just a really underrated aspect of his game. You know, obviously when you think about pass rush, 3-4 or 4-3, you're always thinking defensive end, outside linebacker, whatever. You're not thinking so much on the inside, but he really does bring that pressure from the inside. And so you don't have him there. I mean, he's just a playmaker. He can run to the ball faster. You know, he can cover guys. When you have these subs in for him, you have Casey Matthews, who's actually performed a lot better than anyone can expect, but he's not going to cover anyone. He's more of just a downhill guy, you know, a two-down linebacker. Emmanuel Acho, you know, a brother of a certain Cardinals player.
Yes, yes.
Sam Acho. You know, again, like he tries hard, smart player, but really just not special in any way. And then the Eagles use their first-round pick, Marcus Smith, as like kind of like a nickel linebacker on third down, more so of a coverage guy. He is intriguing athleticism, but it's a new position for him, so it's only bound, or he's only going to be prone to make mistakes at times, which happened in week 4 when the Eagles were playing the 49ers, and there was a play where Colin Kaepernick scrambled to his left, kind of, you know, the play kind of broke, and Marcus Smith, you know, new position, forgot to stay with Frank Gore, and that, you know, that was a big touchdown. I think it was like a 55-yard run or 55-yard catch and run for Frank Gore for a touchdown. So with Kendricks not there, you know, it's significant, and he hasn't been there since week 3, and the Eagles have been getting by. They've only lost one of those games, but, you know, they're definitely better with him.
So you had the addition of Sproles this year on offense. There's the loss of DeSean Jackson. That was all sorts of fun. The things that came out right before and right after. But in some ways, you can tell offensively that they miss what he brings to the table. How different is this year's offense in terms of what they try to do? Obviously, the results haven't been the same thus far, really. But what are they doing differently now without DeSean Jackson? I sense there is a little bit of disappointment in Riley Cooper's performance thus far this year, but mm-hmm. What are they doing differently this year with the addition of Sproles, but the subtraction of Jackson?
You know, it's funny because I almost haven't noticed a huge difference in terms of, you know, what their attack is. I mean, they've still been throwing deep a lot. They threw deep a lot last year. The problem is just, I think a lot of it is on Foles. He's not getting the ball to where it needs to be, especially on these deep passes. It's always underthrown, or a few have been underthrown and picked off. I don't know if really that's an issue between him and Jeremy Maclin. That's mostly who he's targeting deep anyway, Jeremy Maclin. And it's not like Jeremy Maclin is slow by any means. I mean, you look at this guy, he has a lot of talent, and he's having a pretty good year, and he's getting open. That's the thing. You look at all 22, or you just see it during the game, you know, Maclin has his man beat. He has a couple steps on him, but Foles is either overthrowing it or the ball just isn't on target. I mean, that almost seems like it's a chemistry issue or a timing issue there. Not so much as, you know, some people will say, you know, well, if you had DeSean Jackson, it's going to be harder to overthrow him. And in theory, that makes sense. But, you know, this is the NFL.
You still have to throw balls on target.
Right, yeah. That doesn't, I don't know how that gives Foles a pass. I mean, you have to complete the target. You have to complete a pass to an open guy, and for whatever reason, he just has been terrible with the deep ball. And I, you know, maybe that goes back to the running game because, you know, they're not getting the play action set up. They're not, the timing isn't there. You know, it's really, it almost seems like it's this one big problem, and I really don't think it's just Deshaun.
So if looking at the matchup with the Cardinals, right now are number one against the run in the NFL. What do you say are Philadelphia's chances looking at if they're unable to do the on offense what they want to do in the running game? Say they're only able to rush between 75, 70, and 80 yards a game in a contest. How does that change? How does that affect what they try to do offensively? And what sort of a chance would you give the Eagles if they are unable to move the ball on the ground like they like to?
Well, we saw two games this year where LeSean McCoy just couldn't get anything going. And one of those was in week 3 against the Washington Redskins. And that put a lot of pressure on Nick Foles to step up. And to his credit, he played pretty well. That was, I believe, you could say that was his best game probably of the season. And, you know, he didn't have a running game. Washington completely shut McCoy down, and McCoy actually suffered something of a concussion in that game, and Sproles really didn't do much.
Eric Winston would disagree with that comment, because you are a concussed, or there's no mild, there's no kind of, you're either concussed
so,
or you're not.
See? So he was out, and then Foles really stepped up in that game. But then you look at the next week, and you know, McCoy couldn't get anything going against the 49ers, who, as you know, have a pretty stout run defense. And a lot of the pressure was on Foles, and he couldn't get anything going. That was just a terrible, awful game for him. So, you know, I don't like Foles' chances if the run game isn't going at all. I don't think the Eagles need to run crazy over Arizona to be successful. I just think they need to get the run game going to where it's, you know, some, at least, you know, theoretically a threat, you know, not just, can't just be totally ineffective.
That makes sense. I'm gonna pull the attention a little bit towards the whole Philadelphia note. Over here on the West Coast, now, I'm familiar with Chip Kelly. I'm a Pac-12 guy, been here in Arizona my entire life, follow Arizona State, so I was actually kind of happy to see Chip Kelly go, I'm gonna be honest. but Philadelphia is known for not being a happy place when it comes to their sports. Even when things are good, they're still not really happy. What's that case right now? Is Philadelphia happy with the Eagles? Are they excited? Or is there just always a little bit of tension underneath it? They don't think that it's good enough.
I think there's always this sense, you know, they're not going to be good enough, or they're not good enough, especially because they're only in year two of Chip Kelly. I really don't think it's to the point where, like, everyone is ready to see this team as a legitimate contender, even though they are 5-1, and you know they do look like one of the better teams in the NFC, I would say. But I think there is a decent amount of optimism going forward, just because of that Giants win. It was so big, and like you said, then you go into the bye, so you're still feeling great after that win a whole week later, because you know it's carrying over. But I think we're going to find out a lot about this team going down the stretch here. They have a lot of games coming up. They face the Cowboys twice, which is going to be huge. I mean, this Cardinals game is obviously big because it's the best team they've really played, at least in a while, since the 49ers. You know, there's a lot of questions to be answered with this team, like you said earlier, just even Nick Foles. And then is this defense, which just pitched a shutout, is it that legitimate, or is that just a fluke? Is the run game really back? There's a lot of questions here. And I think a lot of people, you know, want to see those answered before they're fully ready to, you know, say, all right, you know, we're ready to go into the playoffs. We're a legitimate contender. We have a shot just as good as anyone.
Okay, we'll hit down the stretch. The NFC West has a reputation of being the best division in the NFL. So far, it looks like the 49ers and the Seahawks have taken a bit of a step back. In the AFC West, who had 3 playoff teams a season ago, they still look pretty good, but they do have the Raiders, who are winless, so you have to kind of look at them. The NFC East, Dallas 6-1, Philadelphia at 5-1, Giants, who you never know what, they're talented, but they don't always put it together, and then you've got the Redskins. Give your case. What would you say the NFC West is? NFC East is better than the NFC West, and the AFC West concurrently? Make your case. Is the NFC East better than the NFC West, and why?
Well, that's a good question. I think the NFC West has more depth. I think the NFC is a little more top heavy with the Eagles and the Cowboys looking, you know, pretty good. Where you have the NFC West with the Cardinals looking good. I'm not sure they're on the Eagles or the Eagles Cowboys level. I know that's not going to go over well on this podcast, but I just want to see more from the Cardinals before I see that. But
you're not the only, understandably. They are 5-1. They've beaten some really good teams, but they haven't put together a complete football game yet. They've either not done it on offense, they've not done it completely on defense, or they've had flaws in special teams. But they're beating good teams. But yeah, that's why I know the nation hasn't gone on board with them because of that.
Right. And then you have, you know, the Seahawks, who obviously are the champions, and they've kind of slumped here in recent weeks. But even though they're losing, I mean, they're not looking terrible. It's not like they're getting blown out or anything here. I mean, they're still in these games. There's still a lot of talent on that team. 49ers, obviously a talented team as well. It's just a really weird coaching situation there, though. Like, I just really can't figure out what's going on in San Francisco, and the coach probably isn't going to be back next year, and they're even if they win the Super Bowl, apparently. So I have no idea what to make of them. And then the Rams, you know, I said it last year, you know, I really took a liking to the Rams last year because, you know, even though, you know, the bottom of the division, if you could take, like, every team from that's fourth place in the division and create, like, a tournament out of that, I mean, the Rams are going to beat everyone easy. They had to be the best worst team in the division because, you know, they have
some... With a
backup
quarterback, and this year with a third-string quarterback.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, veteran coach, some mix of talent there. So I think there's better depth there. I think, you know, you don't find that same kind of depth with the Redskins at the bottom, even though, you know, they played some close games. They played Arizona relatively tough for having been on a short week and having Kirk Cousins start, who, as we know now, just, you know, got benched for Colt McCoy.
That's so fun when the teams in your division have strife. It's so good for your team when the other teams in the division have problems. I don't feel bad at all to see the whole Seattle thing. It's fun to watch a team have tension and the whole coaching situation. So yeah, that's fun to see from a division perspective, to see that fun around the division. I'm sure it's not very fun for Eagles fans to see the Cowboys doing well, though.
I think it's a big surprise to not only Eagles fans, but just the whole NFL. I think we're all very surprised to see the Cowboys. That's what they're 6-1 now, and you
know,
looking
good doing it, and looking really good doing it. Yikes!
They are legitimate. There's no fluke about what they're doing. I don't think they're a fluky team. The only thing I wonder about them is, you know, I think we all have to wonder, is how sustainable is it? I mean, you're working DeMarco Murray on a pace that's, you know, unprecedented, and this historical carry number rate, and they're giving him so much work. You just wonder, you know, if this run game stops. That Dallas defense still isn't very talented. I think they're something like second to last in yards per play. So they're still giving up yards. It's just that they're not on the field because the run game, it really is controlling, you know, the run game is hiding that defense. So I have my questions in terms, not of terms of that they're legit, but just, you know, how long it'll last. And maybe it does last. I don't know. We'll see. I can guarantee you this, even though, you know, this is a Cardinals podcast, I'm sure Cardinals fans will enjoy those Eagles-Cowboys games this year.
I'm sure we will, especially we got Dallas the following week in Dallas after after Philadelphia. Here's the prediction. I'm obviously taking a lot of heat for my prediction over when in our five questions when you asked me for my prediction. I said a 27-13 Cardinals win. I am taking a lot of heat from your readers right now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it will be that high scoring overall. I don't think it will be a shootout at all. I think, especially if Darren Sproles is not in the game, I'm going to stand by my prediction. But now I forgot to ask you that in the five questions. I was going to do the plus one and add a prediction. I don't know why I didn't put it there. Maybe it was because I was writing the questions late at night. I'm not sure. But give us your prediction for the game this Sunday, and what will be the big takeaways, some big predictions that you have.
Well, I'll start off with one thing, you know, that I do want to mention, and that is, you know, the Cardinals have not turned the ball over this year. I think they only have four, and that's pretty impressive. And the Eagles, on the other hand, are second, have the second most turnovers, so that is a huge concern. But with that said, I think there are positives to be taken for Philadelphia from this Giants performance. and I think they go into Arizona. And I think, you know, even though the Eagles won last year, I do feel like this is almost sort of a revenge game for them, as weird as that may sound, because, you know, we talked about this in the question exchange. I think more so the fans were slighted by the fact that, you know, the Cardinals, our head coach Bruce Arians, kind of complained a little about the calls, that, you know, the iffy calls. I think this is a situation where the Eagles are like, it's kind of like a boxing match where, you know, the guy, you know, you have your champion and he beats the guy, but he kind of wants to, you know, beat him again just to prove, you know, there's nothing fluky about it. We won, you know, it was legitimate. So I'm, of course, I have to pick the Eagles here to win. I'm taking them 30-23.
Okay, that's a valid, and in terms of that, do you have any big predictions or bold predictions, big takes of things that are going to happen during the game? Obviously, 30 points would be a big deal if Cardinals give up 30 points.
Yes. I think Nick Foles will look surprisingly sharp. I think one thing that I undersold, at least in the preview or something, was that, you know, I was looking at the Cardinals' pass rush, and obviously this changes if Campbell can play, which seems a little unsure right now. Can't count on it. I'm not super impressed with that pass rush, and I feel like if you give Nick Foles the time, and the Cardinals' pass defense numbers haven't been awesome, I feel like, you know, maybe he does have a decent game here.
Okay. Arizona Cardinals fans, this has been Brandon Gauton from Bleeding Green Nation. Tell us how we can follow you on Twitter. As a question, how many days is the wait period before when you join the site before you can comment?
Well, the wait period is 1 day. Okay. So, you know, if you want to make fun of the Eagles or something here, definitely sign up now so you can get that in. And then, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Gauton. That's BrandonGauton. Also follow the Bleeding Green account for our site Twitter. And then obviously check us out, Bleeding Green Nation, and then our podcast, BGN Radio.
All right. Thank you, Brandon. I really appreciate the time on the show. Thank you so much. And we'll see what happens on Sunday.
Sounds good.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
It's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe Iced Range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.